You know, a few days ago, a number of people emailed me regarding a remarkable article entitled The 30 Tyrants, written by Lee Smith. The title refers to a group of Athenian politicians who had colluded with Sparta, which had finally defeated Athens in 404 BC after 27 years of fighting in the Peloponnesian War. Now, these 30 tyrants were not just collaborating with their conquerors. They agreed with the Spartans. They agreed that democracy was a bad idea, and that the Spartan system of ruling a perpetually brutalized and terrorized population by a small band of enlightened dictators was in fact a marvelous idea, despite the fact that such views flew directly in the face of everything that Athens had stood for and fought for and died for during an entire generation of gore and bloodshed. Here in America, we recently emerged from a conflict that lasted from the Soviet blockade of Berlin on June 24, 1948, until the fall of the Soviet Union on December 26, 1991. It was known as the Cold War. 15,890 days of struggle with a political and economic system antithetical to our own. The Cold War handily exceeded the Peloponnesian War by enduring for 46 years, 6 months and 2 days. Now, to win the Cold War, the United States had to use its scientific, technological, and economic lead to continually devise qualitatively better weapons. One example of this was the acoustic silence of the American nuclear submarine, the most important single component of which was the design of the ship's propeller. But at no point during the 46 and a half years of the Cold War did American politicians turn over the manufacturing of those propellers to the Soviet Union because the Russians offered them a cheaper price for constructing them. Such an idea would have been rightfully considered sheer suicidal insanity. Not only would allowing our mortal enemies to build these critical components give them a pretty damn good idea on how to employ these incredibly expensive, top-secret technologies for their own use against United States forces. But the entire idea of paying the enemy for anything just doesn't make any sense, does it? So, why is it that so many of our key military, medical, and industrial components are manufactured in China? Well, it's because America has, after four notable years, returned to the political control of politicians very much like Athens' 30 tyrants, people who not only refuse to recognize a cruel and totalitarian dictatorship, but who in fact admire it. People who would like to emulate them, and most especially, people who would like to become very, very wealthy by doing business with them, enriching themselves at taxpayers' expense, by selling secrets that greatly endanger the same citizens who paid for those secrets, and who now risk being ruined and enslaved by them. Now, the term that these elites use to describe this transnational idea is globalism. It's the idea of globalism that allows American companies to do business with people who are not our friends, and who the most cursory study shows to be actively working to defeat and destroy America. Now, there are in America political groups whose stated purpose is to destroy the United States and everything it stands for. These groups can legitimately be called anti-American. But in order to understand the globalist elite, you need to realize that these players are not actually anti-American. While they're certainly not protecting American interests, they're not actively trying to destroy the country in the same way that anti-American forces desire. It's just that when it comes to America, these American businessmen don't really feel like they have a dog in that fight. I think the best label to apply to these people is not to refer to them as anti-American, but rather as post-American. You see, they believe that the entire idea of nation states are obsolete, and so their allegiance is not to their country of origin, but rather simply to each other. And like the 30 tyrants, they've convinced themselves that what they are doing is for the greater good and is in fact virtuous. Now, they achieve this by rationalizing that anyone opposed to moving critical infrastructure overseas must do so not out of patriotic concerns, but rather out of racist ones. Now, all of this would be bad enough if the magnet drawing all of these technologies in was a believer in globalism itself, but it's not. China, who hasn't a single military ally in the world, is not interested in world globalism. The communist ideologues running the world's manufacturing base are interested in one thing, and one thing only, and that is Chinese hegemony over East Asia, and eventually Africa, Europe, and then the final bastion of individualism, the United States of America. The Chinese Communist Party has openly discussed what they call unrestricted warfare, that's their term, unrestricted warfare against the United States. Now, the short form of all that is that at present, China realizes that it remains militarily inferior to the United States. China continues to do everything it can to close that gap, but that clear-eyed, fundamental realization of American military superiority has led China to an inevitable conclusion, and that is simply this. The invincibility of the American sword is predicated on the strength of the arm that wields it. And if you could weaken that arm, or the will to use it, or both, then the sword itself, as awesome and magnificent as it may be, becomes utterly useless. And that's precisely what China is doing. It's making irresistible deals to post-American globalists to move both American technological secrets and supply chains to China itself, while continuing to buy influence throughout the American economy, its politicians, and even its military and intelligence agencies. Now, here's just a handful of examples from Lee Smith's excellent article. The link to that article is in the description below. In early October of 2019, Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey tweeted the following, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." Chinese broadcasters immediately vowed to stop carrying Houston Rockets games. Chinese manufacturers of sport and goods immediately canceled their contracts. And within a few days, Daryl Morey went from being pro-American to post-American, issuing a follow-up apology which included this. "I have had a lot of opportunities since that tweet to hear and consider other perspectives. I've always appreciated the significant support of our Chinese fans and sponsors. I would hope that those who are upset will know that offending or misunderstanding them was not my intention." To which American social justice billionaire LeBron James helpfully added, quote, "Even though, yes, we do have freedom of speech, it can be a lot of negative that comes with it." That's what happens when somebody says something as destructive and provocative as fight for freedom. Stanford University accepted $58 million in Chinese money in exchange for selling highly sensitive research that the American taxpayer had already paid Stanford to develop in the first place. Both Harvard and Yale universities have systematically underreported the amount of Chinese money that they receive. In June of 2020, a Harvard professor decided to augment his $15 million research grant, paid for by American taxpayers like you and me, with a $50,000 per month stipend from a Chinese Communist Party institution in order to, quote, "recruit and cultivate high-level scientific talent in furtherance of China's scientific development, economic prosperity, and national security," unquote. The formerly respected Brookings Institute published a glowing article praising the Chinese communications giant Huawei. The article was funded by the Chinese communications giant Huawei. Dianne Feinstein, who back in the early 80s had begun courting Chinese money, which soon flooded into San Francisco Bay Area tech startups, had maintained a Chinese chauffeur for many years despite repeated security concerns. I was not terribly surprised to discover that this driver was identified as a spy for the Chinese Communist Party, or was I particularly shocked to hear that as a result of her lifetime of selfless service to the American people, Dianne Feinstein has a net worth that the LA Times has estimated at $58.5 million. And as the post-American ideology that Hollywood promotes generates ever smaller domestic revenues, it depends more and more on the Chinese market to save them from the box office disasters that they continue to make. But this last year, not a single U.S. film made it into the Chinese top 10. China is making its own movies now for its own people, and these are not post-China glamorizations of a globalist ideal. When shooting had to be wrapped on the sequel to Top Gun, it was discovered that Tom Cruise was wearing a flight jacket that had patches referring to Taiwan. Chinese officials protested to the studio and threatened to ban it in China. The producers assured them that they would digitally blur the patches for the Chinese audience. This was insufficiently obsequious, however. Chinese officials said the patches would have to be blurred worldwide, and so that's what Hollywood did. They kowtowed, as protocol demanded. And when the Wuhan virus erupted, it was only a matter of days before Chinese officials made it known to the American news media giants that they took a dim view of naming the virus after the place it originated. Immediately, the American press not only ceased referring to COVID-19 as the Wuhan virus, they went into a full court counterattack by bleating that anyone who called the Wuhan virus, did it out of pure racism. And we could go on and on and on. Now, I don't want to let these examples give you the wrong impression. The post-American elites do indeed have deeply held core foundational principles. It's just that the post-Americans are not so short-sighted as to allow those deeply held core foundational principles to get in the way of making significant amounts of cash. There are also ongoing comments from these bubble-dwelling billionaires that seem to strongly indicate that they have an admiration of China's ability to have well-connected power elites get things done quickly and efficiently without having to deal with all of those bothersome yokels whose mansions don't overlook the ocean. Like the 30 Athenian tyrants, they not only collaborate with the authoritarian dictatorial city-state across the Peloponnesian Isthmus, they desperately wish for that same kind of unilateral power in their home city where democracy itself was born. And so here we are, a nation now governed by post-American politicians, speaking through post-American media outlets, protected by post-American tech giants, as we're lectured on our archaic, quaint, provincial racism by post-American Hollywood. And there they sit, in their fabulous houses with spectacular views up and down all of the coastlines in the world, a small handful of unimaginably wealthy transnational globalists who identify with no one but each other, and for whom the rest of us are merely consumers or taxpayers, or both. And the only player that's fully awake on this entire high-tech board is an ancient culture that has not for one moment of its existence trusted anyone or anything on the other side of their great wall, and who now control the arm that holds America's mighty sword, paying top dollar to make sure that it stays its hand as they scrutinize it closely in order to learn the secrets that will allow them to forge one of their own.